Big D Entertainment, in association with Dipsy Doodle Productions, presents the Dave Holly Hour, brought to you by the Sky Lounge and Tea, XL Chiropractic, and Quality Nails. The Dave Holly Hour features Sioux Empire Arts and Entertainment Conversations and has been recognized by the Sioux Falls Stage Awards with a special distinction for promoting the arts. A true lover of arts, entertainment, good food, and fun times, including an occasional Jack Daniels. Okay, so a few Jack Daniels. Here he is, Dave Holly.
Thank you, Zach Dresch, for that incredible introduction that you just nailed week in and week out exactly the same way. It's amazing what you provide this show. It's also amazing what Zach provides around the Sioux Empire for entertainment. He was part of the Goodnight Theater Collective's band for their cabaret last week, which was amazing. We'll talk a little bit about something related to that coming up in just a moment. This is episode 84. I'm Dave Holly. Thanks for joining. Certainly do appreciate it. We talk to the creatives around the Sioux Empire on this show when it comes to anything associated with arts and entertainment. Today, we've got a couple of great guests. First off, we have Jana Gearhart Fitzsimmons. She is the artistic director for Bear Bodkin's Theater. Yeah, Shakespeare in the Park is back after our little COVID twist from last year. Also, we have Eric Manthe. He's been on the show before as well. And Eric is a guitarist, but he's also an author. And we talked to him about his writing project that he's been working on of late and where you'll be able to get some of it. We'll talk about wonderful arts and entertainment with both of those guests today. But in the meantime, you know what we like to start off with.
Time to grab your favorite beverage, lift it high, and toast it to being Thursday, a.k.a. Weekend Eve.
Hey, the weekend isn't around the corner. It's here.
So long, hump day and your frumpy way. We say hello to Thursdays with opening nights. The weekend is near and we can see the bright lights. Yes, Thursday, you're so hearty. We can't wait for Friday. So a day early, we start the party.
All right, get out your glass of milk, your glass of water, your cup of coffee, your chocolate malt, your beer, your wine, your cocktail. Jack Daniels, Diet Coke with a lime here, good old Jasper Newton, and toast it up to something that I alluded to with Goodnight Theater. Yeah, you can toast Goodnight Theater continually because they just bring it every time that they're on stage. But what was great was the live audience. Live audiences. It's amazing what a difference that makes for those that are performing and providing arts and entertainment for you and me. So thank you. Toast to live audiences. It was splendid. That crowd was ready to erupt in that theater at the Balbus of the Washington Pavilion. Ooh, my, can't wait to see even more shows now. What else is going on? Oh, yes. Before we get to that little extra shout out that we do, I do need to mention a couple of things. All right. First of all, this Saturday night, get out to Straw Bale Winery. It's just north of Sioux Falls up near Renner. And Don and his wife are going to put on a great thing because they're allowing Midtown Coffee Radio Hour to have their first truly outdoor live event at Straw Bale. So make sure you take that in Saturday night. We're actually going to get going around 5:30 with some pre-show music and so forth. The Stye Family Band's going to be there. Also, Nate Holtz, one of the great comedians from town, will be in attendance. He'll be on the show part as well as part of the pre-show. And our regular House Blend Band will be playing during the pre-show. And that'll probably get underway about 6. So you want to, you know, get out there about 5:30. Take your lawn chairs out there. Find your spot. Sit down and enjoy the pre-show music. And then the show will get underway at 7 o'clock. You'll be out of there just a little bit after 8 o'clock on Saturday night. That's this Saturday night, so make sure you take that in. Also, 1 week from today, Thursday the 24th, Big D Entertainment is hosting a family-friendly show at the Archery Shack / Smoke Shack in Lenox, South Dakota. Showtime at 7:30. Tickets are $10 for adults. Ages 5 to 15 are $5. Under the age of 5 gets in free. Bring the whole family. Smoke Shack is the restaurant that's associated with the Archery Shack. They are going to have some specials that night, so make sure you make reservations so you can eat there, stay for the show then, and then that show price, that can be paid in cash or via Venmo at the venue. Okay, so that night, when the doors open, you can come in and pay it that way. Or if you want some advance tickets, feel free to go on Venmo. My username is at Dave-Holly-1, and that's the numeral 1. So if you want to get some tickets beforehand, certainly do so that way. Okay, we're caught up? Good. That means we have time for
Honorable Mention.
Oh, Honorable Mention is a fun one this time. Ryan Gruey is one of the great bar staff at our friends down at T in the Sky Lounge. He always has my drink ready for me when I go in to do trivia or any other time we'd have to happen to be visiting down there. Ryan is Johnny on the spot. Well, he knows everything that I'm involved in with the entertainment and so forth, and that I love microphones. And his company needed an old-fashioned looking microphone for a video that they were shooting. So he ordered one and ended up getting two. And it's just a little plastic thing. It actually can work with a laptop or any other type of computer. You know, you can put it in. You could do your Zoom meetings with it if you wanted to. I'm sure the quality's not the greatest, not what I'm used to with the microphones that I have. But it's like Christmas, kids. It's the thought that counts because it's just cool looking. And it is next to one of my awards here in the Dipsy Doodle Studios. So, Ryan Gruey, thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. It looks great here in the studio. You'll have to stop by and take a look at it sometime. All right. Honorable mention winner Ryan Gruey. He can add that to his resume now, can't he? And what you can listen for coming up at the end of the hour, it's going to be Eric Manthe. He's going to talk about his writing project. But up next, the artistic director of Bear Bodkin's Theater, Jaina Gerhardt Fitzsimmons, next on the Dave Holly Hour.
Dr. Perry Langston and Dr. Corey Tooney know excellence is in you. That's why they provide you with excellent care at XO Chiropractic, improving your overall health in spirit, body, mind, and will. Get results the natural way. Arrange a consultation, 605-332-9235 or exochiros.com. Excellent care for excellent people. XO Chiropractic, located at 4309 South Racket Drive in Sioux Falls.
With a passion for arts and entertainment, here again, Dave Holly.
Welcome back to the Dave Holly Hour, everyone. Oh, my goodness gracious. The Sioux Falls Parks and Rec Department had to parlay a few things from a year ago, had to delay them and so forth, part of which was a big, big joy of my life every summer, going to see Shakespeare at Falls Park. Bear Bodkin's Theater, last year, Jaina, we had to talk about the fact you weren't going to be having Bear Bodkin's, and we also did that via Zoom. So, Jaina Gerhardt Fitzsimmons, it's great to see you in
great
person.
To see you too.
It has been way too long, and it sure has. We had a delay in Bear Bodkin's, along yes. with so many other things that had to have a delay.
Yeah.
This has to just feel like a big weight off the shoulders for you, doesn't it?
It does. It feels like a step toward a more normal summer
right.
for us.
Yeah.
Last year was so strange not doing Shakespeare in the park, and it just, you know, it kind of feels like the kind of normal like rhythms by which we kind of measure our year were just all off. And so it's wonderful to be back in the rehearsal room with a really great cast. I'm ready to bring Much Ado About Nothing to Falls Park this summer.
The one Shakespeare play I've ever been in.
Yay!
Much Ado About Nothing. I played a watchman.
Awesome. awesome. Those are such great roles.
Yeah.
So funny.
And you've got, what, six people in the cast on this?
We do, yes.
For how many characters?
Oh my gosh, a whole bunch. The whole play. The whole play's worth of characters. I haven't counted them up to know off the top of my head, but everybody's playing three, four characters.
That's fantastic. Well, tell us about the cast, first of all.
Yeah, so it's a really wonderful group. We have a really nice, like energetic cast that are just really ready to tackle this. They've been so fun to work with in rehearsals. We have some familiar faces for folks who have enjoyed Bear Bodkin's shows in the past. And so in our six-member cast, we have three folks that are returning from previous mm-hmm. years and then three brand new folks. So it's just been a really nice nice time getting to know them, getting to see what they're bringing to the table to bring this really like funny, light comedy right. to the stage.
And how many of them were Shakespeare actors in the past, you know, aside from Bear Bodkin's?
Yeah.
So how many come to this knowing what Shakespeare's about?
All of them this
Excellent.
Year.
Excellent.
Yes, which is wonderful. Usually we have, you know, a couple where it's their first kind of professional Shakespeare experience. And that's always great too. But this year it's just been really fun. We can kind of dive right in and we have a lot of good experience.
And that's wonderful mm-hmm. because I remember being in college and that was my first, you know, other than reading Romeo and Juliet in high school, that type of thing. It was my first experience. And it takes just a little bit to get the meter of the speeches down and so forth. But once you do, it's such a great understanding and it's just such a fulfillment of right. the English language.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a great in that regard. So it's wonderful that you have that cast that already has that knowledge.
Yes.
It just makes for a better experience, obviously, for the audience as well.
Well, and I think too, like, this is such a nice play, like for folks who maybe this is their first time seeing a Shakespeare mm-hmm. play, Much Ado About Nothing was the first Shakespeare play I ever saw. I saw the movie version.
Right.
and just really like that was when Shakespeare really came alive for me as a kid. And so I think it's just a really nice, like the comedy is just right there. It still makes perfect sense. It's still funny today. And it's just a nice story, and nice and light for, I think, you know, these times that we really just kind of are ready to be back at the theater. We're ready to be enjoying and laughing again. So so we're really looking forward to that.
And that obviously is a great thing, you know, getting back out and being at the remnants of the Queen Bee Mill. Are we going to have any restrictions? COVID-wise back out?
Yeah, what we're going to do, I mean, of course, we've been following the CDC guidelines, and also it's been really great that, like, Actors Equity has put out guidelines so that we kind of have, industry standard practices okay. to follow. So we're doing that. Outdoors, we know that we're a little bit safer, which is really great. And so what we are planning on doing is limiting the capacity in the mill just a little bit. And then we are asking audience members to bring their own seating this year.
So no bleachers.
So we won't have bleachers. Okay. That way people can kind of space out a little mm-hmm. bit, and then they take their seating home with them, so we don't have to worry about, like, you know, wiping anything yeah. down or anything like that. And hopefully, you know, we hear every year that, like, oh, the bleachers are sometimes a little bit uncomfortable, so maybe this will be something that will be a change that will stick around, so people can really just be super comfortable and enjoy the show. So bag chairs, lawn chairs, blankets, whatever folks want to bring to sit on in the grass and enjoy the show.
All right, do we still need to, like, make a reservation despite the fact that it's a free show? We still need to contact the Parks Department?
No, what you do is you just come to Falls Park. We start handing out our free tickets at 6 o'clock. And so we'll have the amount of tickets that we have. Once they're gone, they're gone.
Okay.
But then we'll open the gates at around 6:30 for people to come, and we'll begin the show at 7.
Awesome. Now, June 30th,
yes.
July 1 through 3, and then the following weekend as well, correct?
Yes, the 8th through the 11th.
All right.
Following weekend.
And what can people expect for a Bear Bodkin's production of a Shakespeare play?
Yeah, so at Bear Bodkin's, we really embrace what is called original practice style. So we really think a lot about how Shakespeare was produced in Shakespeare's own time. And so to that end, we use really minimal set and costume pieces. We are outside, of course, in our beautiful outdoor theater at the Queen Bee Mill in the ruins. It's like one of the most beautiful places in Sioux Falls. And, you know, just like Shakespeare, you know, performed in an open air theater. So we kind of nod to that way. way. But really, a lot of what we do lets the audience really use their imagination. So our actors will wear contemporary clothes. Like we mentioned before, we have a small cast of actors that play all of the roles. And so they're switching characters. There's a lot of really fast switching in this show, as you probably remember.
Right.
There's a lot happening, especially at the end of the play. And so they use like kind of really quick costume shifts to do that. And we always think of our audience member as like the final actor of our acting troupe that we get to kind of welcome into the cast when we're performing. So there's some fun opportunities to kind of participate and be engaged, but it's just a really fun, kind of fast, free Shakespeare experience. And yeah, our show runs about an hour and a half, so no intermission. And
okay, yeah. I was going to ask that because I know that you know, Shakespeare plays in their original form can be quite lengthy.
Yes.
But I know that you take, as a director and producer, a liberty of being able to do a shorter version and so forth.
Yeah.
So what are the things that you concentrate on as director of this show with this cast that already has, you know, pretty good background when it comes to Shakespeare?
So what I always say is, I mean, of course, like, you know, it's the summer. It's been a rough 18 months. We are excited to just have fun. That's what I always say. Our number one job is at Bear Bodkins is just to have as much fun as we possibly can and tell the story as clearly as we can to the audience. We want Shakespeare to be for everybody. And we know that sometimes there's that barrier. Oh my gosh, am I going to understand what's going to happen? Is this for me? And yes, we want to say, yes, it is. It's for anyone who wants to come and enjoy the show. So that's always kind of what we really focus on, is just clarity and storytelling, making it a really fun experience. And of course, like as the director, when I'm thinking about what show we're going to do, I'm thinking about, of course, the people that kind of are maybe going to return to the cast who I've worked with before, things that might draw new actors to our company and to our production. And then I start kind of working with the script and doing my adaptation, which is one of my favorite steps, is that I really get to look and say, okay, here's where we can really focus on the plot, but I can also start to imagine what might be really exciting for actors to play. And that's how I start to configure the doubling. Okay, hey, if we have like the romantic lead also playing the villain, that's really fun. That like allows an actor to kind of stretch their wings. And so I kind of start thinking about that. And then once we have auditions and I have a cast in mind, then I go back and kind of tweak and make those decisions about, okay, hey, I know that this actor has this strength. It'd be fun to see them in this configuration of roles. So it's kind of like putting together a big puzzle. And then that is something that we kind of keep putting the pieces and kind of rearranging them until we get it just right in rehearsal.
What kind of time consumption is that part then, your adaptation?
It depends on how much experience I've had with the play. There are some plays that I can adapt really quickly. There are some that take a little bit longer. Interestingly, probably the fastest adaptation I did was Shakespeare's longest play, which is Hamlet. Because it's so well constructed, it was really easy to kind of condense. Because, of course, we're using all of Shakespeare's original language. I maintain the meter whenever we can. I'm just kind of taking out for length and clarity. And so yeah, that was the fastest adaptation I did. But usually I kind of think about, like, just to do the initial pass, it's about an hour an act, five-act play. So yeah. But with plays that have a little bit more complicated elements, and Much Ado About Nothing is kind of like that, because we have some kind of plot elements that are kind of messy and they need to all get tied up at the end. It takes a little bit longer.
I can imagine so. What is the draw of Shakespeare? I mean, you know, here's a playwright, author, poet, you know, centuries ago, that we still love and adore.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I think part of it, of course, is that we know we're kind of tapping into something that is really elemental about kind of our human and literary and theater history. This is, you know, Shakespeare's a big figure in our culture still today, hundreds of years later. And so I think there is still that draw to some of our kind of classical roots, if we can call them that. And also, I think, you know, to touch back on what you were saying, there's just this really gratifying element of seeing Shakespeare performed well in a way that really illuminates the story, because it feels like you're being invited in. It's exciting, right? To get the text and go, oh my gosh, yes, I understand what's happening. And it's this maybe older style of speaking, but the stories are so alive. And there's things about these plays that are still really touching or really funny or really like pressing to our current moment. And so I think there's so much to discover in Shakespeare's text that makes it really exciting to see performed today.
So you said Much Ado was the first Shakespeare that you saw and on film. And by the way, is this or is this not the most in terms of a play of Shakespeare's being made into a movie? There's been more movies of this than any other one of his plays?
I would have to go back to that. I don't know. There have been some film adaptations, especially recently. We've had a couple. But yeah, I don't know which one is the most frequently
I was
adapted.
Just thinking it might be, you know, more for somebody maybe wanting to experience Shakespeare for the first time.
Yeah.
They maybe at least have heard about Much Ado About Nothing because of the film industry.
A little more name recognition.
Maybe even seen one of them at some point, caught it on cable or something.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your favorite Shakespeare?
Oh, that's such a tough question.
The one you're producing at the moment?
You know, that is always true because I'm so like embedded in it, and it's something that is just like kind of occupying my thoughts all the time. And so, yeah, and this is obviously one of my very favorites, so I'm really excited to do this one again. But I would say I really like the tragedies. I like kind of the creepy stuff. So Macbeth is probably my favorite of Shakespeare, just because there's so much happening. There's just a lot of really interesting elements that come together. So I like the creepy stuff. So we'll say Macbeth. But yeah, I think that there's just a lot across his whole canon to just love. So it's hard to pick a favorite, but I guess I just kind of did. So
all right. Well, we'll let you go with that one.
Yeah,
it's a good one, you know, and that's another recognizable.
Yes.
Well, I guess maybe Romeo and Juliet might be the most well-known of everything.
Maybe the most read.
Probably. And I think that's a lot of high school literature, maybe sophomore, junior year, something along that line. All right. So we're going to be back outside. It's going to be great. And we're praying and knocking on wood and everything else. And Mother Nature will provide decent weather for it.
Yes.
So are there any contingency plans if you end up with a few shows rained out?
You know, the Parks and Rec Department is super supportive, and they are the ones who you know, if we need to cancel a show, they'll kind of make that call due to weather. We don't reschedule our shows just because our actors have really tight schedules this summer. Well, oftentimes, like if we have a show that, for example, gets like interrupted by rain, as people are leaving, and you know, we'll say, "Okay, come back at this time tomorrow," you know, and then you can catch the ending. Or sometimes we'll try and like speed up the show or kind of jump to the end, so that they get kind of a more full effect. But yeah, we always hope for really good weather, and hopefully it'll cool off a little bit.
We've been had a little some bit hot warm days. The past few weeks, no doubt about that. Tell us about the backstory of Bear Botkin's. And kind of go through the history of this theater company.
So Bear Botkin's was founded in 1997 by Ivan and Vicki Fuller. And they were interested in this style of Shakespeare and bringing it to Sioux Falls. And so they began doing shows out at Falls Park. And then they would do also some shows like during the year, like at Augustana or other venues. I joined the company as an assistant director in 2006 when I was in university. And I just really fell in love with the style. I'd always been interested in Shakespeare since I was a kid, and I had had some really wonderful experiences in college, working on Shakespeare, both studying it as like literary text and also as performance. And I had a wonderful acting professor who, you know, just really opened a lot of doors for me in that way, who is now a cast member in Bear Botkin's. She comes back and performs.
Really?
Yes, Nadine Purvis-Schmidt, who is wonderful.
So awesome.
She's great. When I started in 2006, my first show was Measure for Measure. And then in later years, I returned as an actor. And so I had the experience of acting with Bear Botkin's. When Ivan and Vicki decided that they were going to move, they knew that they wanted Bear Botkin's to continue. They wanted to leave it to somebody who really cared about the company, knew the company well. And so that's what they did. They gave it to me. And I've been the producing artistic director since 2010.
All right. Your husband's involved as well?
Yes, he is.
RJ?
Yes. Yeah, he's like my production partner. So he is kind of like our production stage manager, and he does all of our, like kind of the look of the show, the design of the show.
Do you have an AD for this show as well?
I don't. No.
Went solo on this one.
Yeah, and you know, in the past couple of years, we just kept it really small. And that's kind of part of the delight of Bear Botkin's, and kind of another way we nod to how Shakespeare would have been performed in his own time is that, you know, we have this small company of people. We all get together. We're at rehearsal together every night, and we build the show together. So
you've got a cast that is well adapted to Shakespeare. What do you look for, though, when you're casting a part? And what do you look for in auditions that says, yes, they've got to be in this show?
Yeah. Well, you know, this year we did auditions a little bit differently. We did everything remotely. So we had video auditions. We had more people audition this year than maybe ever.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yes, from all over the place. And so I had a lot of decisions to make when I was casting this year. But this year and every year, the biggest thing that I look for is versatility. Because like we've been talking about, the actors need to play mm-hmm. multiple roles and be able to show different characterizations at, you know, the drop of a hat. It's really, really important that they be able to really express different characters with their whole physicality and their voice. And so when I have auditions, I'm usually asking actors to bring a couple of pieces that really show how they can transform from character to character. And so that's the first thing I look for. But I also just look for, you know, people who are kind, who are generous and creative and really wanting to build a show with a team collaboratively. And yeah, so that's really the main things that I'm looking for.
So what number show will this be for Bear Bodkins?
This will be our 24th season.
24th. Excellent. Yes. And how many different cast members have there been throughout?
Oh, you're asking me all these numbers questions. I should have really gone back and counted. Many.
Yeah, I was just saying.
Depending on the show. I mean, since I've become the artistic director, I've really focused on that element of original practice of the small cast. When Ivan and Vicky were directing the shows, sometimes the casts were a little larger. So since I've been artistic director, we've had eight, seven, or six people in the cast every year. So, yeah, whatever that would be. But
yeah, but we should mention that this is just, it's kind of a great way to segue from your regular job during the rest of the year.
Yes.
As a professor at Augustana University.
Yeah.
And working in the theater department. How has that gone over this past year with the pandemic?
There's been so much to adapt to, so much to read and research and try to get a handle on as we've tried to produce shows as safely as possible. That was always our goal in all of this. When we were interrupted by the pandemic, I think that, you know, talking with you last year, I maybe shared with you that we were in progress of Shakespeare's The Tempest. That was the show that got kind of disrupted. And so obviously the spring of 2020, we didn't do any theater. We were just really focusing on getting our students through and, you know, making our classes work as we transitioned into this, you know, kind of new world of online education. And so having the summer last year to really prepare for the school year was important because there was a lot of change. And we really wanted to focus on safety in all things. And so to that end, Augustana did the vast majority of our production work online. So it was a lot of Zoom stuff. We did a Zoom production of A Midsummer Night's Dream that was really fun and really creatively put together. I'm really proud of what our team was able to do as we just ventured into the kind of this new world of online entertainment. We did a series of readings. We did some things that like kind of allowed folks to participate from all over the world sometimes, which was really cool. And then the last show of the season we did, we were able to do in person with a really small invited audience. So it's been a whirlwind. And a lot of things that I never anticipated I would have to learn how to do, I've learned how to do this year. And I really credit the students who were just really, they had wonderful attitudes. They just wanted to jump in and they wanted to do theater, whatever that meant. And so for us, it meant a lot of things that we were doing when we were in our own spaces and through a screen. I think that everybody is really excited that, you know, with news of the vaccine and, you know, all of these, you know, reasons that we can be hopeful, returning to in-person performance is going to just feel like such a gift.
What do you think it's going to be like for the actors? Are they going to have to step it up? Or do you think that because of doing Zoom type of work, that they're just ready to go and that it's automatically going to be ramped up?
You know, I think, you know, I really think everybody's just going to be ready to go and excited to be together. I've seen it in rehearsals and I've heard it from the cast because for many of them, this is their first show back, since before the pandemic where we're rehearsing in the same room and we're able to be together. And so that's just like really giving a lot of nice energy to our rehearsals because we're all excited. My gosh, our first read through, I was like getting a little misty. I was sort of tearing up because I was like, it's so wonderful, to be sitting around a table with people and have that really, that kind of face-to-face connection that just brings so many nuanced things that we don't always get through a screen. But I do think that, especially the members of the cast who are my students, which are a few of them, they have cultivated skills this year that is only going to make their performance stronger. And they want to be performing in front of an audience. So,
all right. Well, we look forward to Bear Bodkins being back in Falls Park at the Queen Bee Mill Remnants, is what I like to call them. And it's going to be fantastic, as per usual, because Bear Bodkins always brings it. And that's what's great. And just give us the dates and the times once again.
Yeah, so we will be at Falls Park June 30th and July 1st through the 3rd and the 8th through the 11th. And our show starts at 7 o'clock.
Fantastic. Now, a couple of questions I always like to ask everybody at the end is, when you're not involved with the arts and entertainment world around the Sioux Empire, what do you like to go out to be entertained?
Oh, well, like we've said, this has been a weird year, so I haven't really gone out to be entertained yet. This is going to be, getting back into it for me. But of course, I'm really interested in things like that Headlights Theater doing, that like Midtown Coffee Hour doing, like just really some neat stuff that is kind of mixing formats in interesting ways. And then, something that I think is really great that I've enjoyed throughout the pandemic is what like the Siouxland Libraries offer and different programs that they are doing. And so they have a really cool summer reading program. So there's just lots going on, and even for someone like me, who's kind of getting back into going out slowly. there's lots to do. Oh, and I'm really excited also for Footloose at the community theater. That's going to be a blast. And I think, Alex Weiland at the helm is just going to make for a really, really excellent theater experience.
All right. So any other hobbies besides arts and entertainment?
I really enjoy spending time with my dogs. I have wonderful dogs. And so, we spend a lot of time outdoors and playing with them and walking them. So that's been really nice, especially throughout the pandemic, to have their company. I'm a big reader. And so that's been occupying a lot of my time as well. But yeah, there's always lots on my to-read list.
All right. Well, fantastic. Jaina Gerhart Fitzsimmons with Bear Bodkins Theater. Thank you so much. Appreciate the time. And like I said, great to see you in person.
Yay, so good to see you. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. And we'll be back with more of the Dave Holly Hour in just a moment.
Sure, they have darts, and you've heard me talk about how ruggedly handsome the trivia host is, but All Caps Fun never stops at the Sky Lounge and Tea. And fun is best had with your friends enjoying live entertainment, as in live and local. Yeah, the Sky Lounge believes in giving you the best bands, solo artists and comedians from the area, the Neo Johnsons, Elizabeth Hunstead, Skylar Volks, as well as many others. And a great staff will make sure you enjoy your fun at the Sky Lounge in T, South Dakota.
Listen whenever, wherever, however you like. Just remember, it's a new Dave Holly Hour episode every Thursday.
Welcome back to the Dave Holly Hour. Always a pleasure to have great guests on, and we just keep rolling with that direction. we got to have great guests, and so thankful that all of you enjoy the conversations we have with them. I'm looking forward to this one. Interviewed him a while back. It's been a few months. He was part of a band that was on the show, but now he's he's not become a writer. He's been a writer the whole time. It's just that he's got a great project that he's been working on. We're going to talk about that with him first, and then we'll talk about him also being a music teacher. Eric Manthey, how are you?
Not too bad, Dave. How are you?
Wonderful. Great to have you along again.
I appreciate you having me.
I tell you what, I keep up with you on social media. not so much Facebook, but definitely.
On the gram, as they say.
On the gram is what they're calling it now.
Yes.
On the gram.
I probably just aged myself.
On the Graham. Well, no, you know, I still say, oh, I'm picking up what you're laying down. So that's like what? How many phrases ago?
Oh. Hey, sometimes certain vernacular is timeless, right?
That's true. But anyway, so I've been following you on Instagram, and tell us about this project that you started. It is called AM 20.
Mm-hmm.
AM, your initials, because
yep.
you're an Eric with an A.
Yes.
What's the 20 part?
Yeah, so I guess to kind of summarize it, this story's been a long time coming for me. I've always been obviously a writer and a musician, and kind of been very fascinated in the different aspects of like a multimedia project. You name the artist, like a Daft Punk or the Gorillaz, or honestly even like a Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, back in the day when they did the Wall and all the music videos for it, I always loved the aesthetic of a really well-produced, really ambitious musical project combined with some sort of really cool, aesthetically pleasing music video or movie or even like a storyline. So to get back to your question, the 20 essentially is just my favorite number.
Okay.
Because I was born on the 20th of a month.
Yes, so, another Sagittarius, if I believe, correct?
Yes.
Yes,
I am.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely. This project, I've been working on it for many years. It's had a few different iterations over time. And again, it's always been a project I've wanted to pursue. The biggest thing was just trying to figure out, you know, how do I build the universe, as I say? How do I expand upon a basic plot line and make it go, you know, not just for 1 year, but for several, and like really make it its own world? And to me, ultimately, it kind of came back to like my upbringing and some of my influences as a kid. For example, which we'll touch on more in a bit, you know, my family hosted exchange students from Japan.
Okay.
For a number of years. So where I grew up, the local university would always bring in, I would say, probably 24 exchange students from from Japan. They usually came right from, I believe it was Tamagawa University. So right in Tokyo that they would bring these kids from. And you can imagine them, you know, coming all the way across the country or across the world to the middle of the country, probably thinking like, oh, they're going to go from, you know, Tokyo to Chicago or New York. And they ended up in the middle of nowhere. But it was a great experience because not only did it immerse me in an Eastern culture from a young age, but then I also realized, just looking back from adolescence, a lot of what I watched and was influenced by as a kid came from Japan as well. A lot of the TV shows I watched and some of the music, ironically, came from there around the same time. Which as an adult, I go back and look and you realize a lot of things like on, you know, you name the popular kids network, they would pay to import and dub these shows
right. That
all came from over there. So without even me realizing it at the time, so much of what I watched came from that culture. So again, going back to writing the story, to me, it was really just trying to find a really honest place where I could write from. Because I've always felt as a very natural writer that I could craft a story that might be in like a comic book sort of fashion, but to me it just wouldn't have been genuine and more from the heart and what I could put out there. And some of the best advice I ever heard as far as writing goes, which is very basic advice, but it's so true, is just essentially write what you know. You know, stay in your lane and kind of work your way out from there. And to me, it just ultimately then came down to, well, I love to travel.
Mm-hmm.
I love that culture. So I'm very aware of, you know, the intricacies of it. And then the motorcycle element too, part of the story with adventure motorcycle riding. I have loved just about anything with two wheels since I was a little kid. Mainly dirt bikes, but pretty much anything with two wheels and an engine, I was a big fan of. And in recent years, I've gotten through travel more a fan of adventure riding, which unfortunately doesn't seem to be as common in the States as it is in other parts of the world. But I thought, well, what a great tie-in for this story if the protagonist is literally on a solo adventure motorcycle trip to a country he's always wanted to go to, and the person that's giving him the guide map is an old exchange student that is a close family friend now. Which, you know, there may be some parallels to that in real
right.
life. There's certainly some real elements I'm drawing from when I put pen to paper, for lack of better terms. So it really just came into those couple different factors and then putting it together and just realizing, well, this is probably the most honest story I can tell and just put out there. And I just know every entry I'm putting out there, I can relate to it, and I just feel like I can wholeheartedly put what I'm working on out there, and people, you know, hopefully can grasp it and maybe learn something new. Because again, you know, there's so much literature out there that maybe like one or two certain genres, and they're very popular and people love it, but then there's also that point of me where it's like, not many people know what adventure motorcycle riding is. Why not be someone that introduces people to that avenue and that way of travel, and hopefully it kind of builds that community. So again, it just kind of turned into, again, knowing what I know the best, which was travel and motorcycles, and just making that a really good, strong, drawn out narrative.
All right. So, where does the music come in on this?
The music, that's coming very soon, Dave.
Okay.
Yes. I will say at this point, from the start of this year until now, it's just been the literary portion of this project. I will update and say right now, though, that come July 1st, I will be launching a website.
Excellent.
That will basically house everything with the project.
Okay.
So every entry from the story so far will be found there by chapter. So if you're someone that's like just kind of getting into the story last minute, and you know, you go to my Facebook page and you're like, oh man, there's so many different entries in here, and I don't know where to go with these albums, which I will admit it's looking a little cluttered. But the website will all be listed by entry and even, you know, chapter. So it should be super easy and streamlined and read like a blog, essentially. But when I launch that, I will also, that's when I'll be adding more of the musical elements as well. So,
all right. So AM20, the Japan Journals.
Yes.
Okay. So yes. Tell us a little bit more about the protagonist.
Yeah, his name's Aiden. Haven't really disclosed the last name just yet, with the exception of the prologue, but first name's Aiden and his last name is Mugen, which again, for motorcycle fans, might get that Easter egg. It's a reference to not necessarily an old motorcycle brand, but it's like an offshoot of a major manufacturer, and they're kind of known for, like, I don't want to say like the supercharger version of, like, you know, they're kind of known as that race team that really supercharges that manufacturer's bike. So anyways, his last name is kind of an homage to that brand. But
it also has his same initials.
Yes. Yes. Which happens to work out. Yeah. So yeah, the 20 portion of it for the story, that will be coming in a later entry. So,
okay.
Again, it's still kind of unfolding at this in this process. The story itself, again, to outline, on average, there's 7 entries a month, and basically I'll be writing this every month all of 2021. So this, as I like to call year one of the story, will not be told until the end of this year, so probably around Christmas time. Basically the long-term vision of the story is to essentially branch it out to a point where it's almost equivalent to a manga, like a Japanese written. Well, it's kind of their version of a comic, essentially. But I like the idea of having more of a serialized story that can just keep going on and on like that, and keeping a cohesive story that just can keep branching out. So I kind of refer to the Japan Journals as like the year one of AM20. Eventually, he will go other places and do other things. Because I'm sure when I post this, a lot of people are like, man, you really like posting about this place. And that was just the strategy. I just committed at the beginning of the year when I started the project that I was going to do on average 7 entries a month for each month for the entire year of 2021. So that's why it's kind of playing itself out like it is. But as far, going back to your question about the character himself, you know, he's, again, not too dissimilar to yours truly. You know, he's come from the middle of the country, kind of grew up racing and very much into music, and, you know, kind of finds himself at, you know, somewhat of a crossroads in life. And when he initially books this trip to Japan, I think he sees it as just kind of this lifetime opportunity. Well, Setsuko, his old exchange student and family friend, when she helps him put together these itineraries, she's doing that to help him, but there's an ulterior motive.
Uh-huh.
So, which, again, that will unfold later this year. So he's someone just kind of at a crossroads and trying to see where the next step in life is, because, you know, he's been a racer and a musician, and you know, he's kind of wanted to branch out and become more of a travel-centric person, like he's done before, and just kind of do that, hopefully more of a full-time thing. And yeah, so that's as much as I'll say right now. Again, plenty will unfold in the coming months.
All right, so you said you've had this project in mind and working on it and so forth for many years, but How much of this was COVID-driven that, hey, we're in this weird time, and I maybe have a little extra time, and I'm really going to go at it now?
Fantastic question. it's interesting you say that, Dave. I don't know if it was so much driven by the pandemic as it was just me saying, you know what, I just need to get up and do this. Mm-hmm. Because, again, like prior years, I mean, I would make, you know, as they would say, like the show Bibles, the book Bibles of this given story, right? And I would have it fairly fleshed out. And then I would start writing a few entries and I would just be like, you know, I just don't like how this is turning out. And I would throw it away and just kind of leave it aside for a while. And I was kind of in that phase for probably 6 years before I finally said, this is the vision, this is where we're going. So this has been a project that's been kind of on and off in different iterations for a handful of years. But it was really just more, maybe it's just me turning 30. I don't know. Maybe some sort of like milestone birthday where I was like, you know, I'm just going to commit to this and just buckle down and do this now. So, it's interesting you say that because it definitely would seem like it would be a convenient thing to start doing during a time like this. But it really just came down to like, you know what? I just got to do this now. And that's just how I pursued it.
All right. So you're getting 7 entries out a month is your goal, if nothing else, right?
Yes.
How hard is it sometimes to sit down, though, and put the pen to paper or fingers to the keyboard?
There's definitely days where, again, like when I'm mapping out every chapter, I know exactly where Aiden's going to go. And, you know, there may be entries where he's in a middle of nowhere, sort of very rural area, going to like an onsen or hot spring, as they basically refer to it as. And there's not much else to do. And you really got to get creative and think of ways to, you know, put 1,000 to 1,500 words out for that entry that's all relevant around that one event. You know, it's like that has definitely pushed my boundaries creatively and like kind of just trying to think of like, OK, well, how can I make this entry more entertaining when all he's doing for one day is this one activity? But on the flip side, then there's days where it's like, you know, there's been entries where he goes to a popular racetrack over there and he tears up the motocross track and he loves it. And to me, that's just like, if those words flow off the fingers so easily that it doesn't even, you know, I could probably write 5,000 words of that entry. Yeah, it's interesting because there's definitely times where I get a few paragraphs into an entry and it's like, okay, I know where I want to go point A to point B, but what do I need to, you know, where do I need to add in? You know, like what, you know, what little intricacies do I want to add in to kind of connect things together? Because again, from day one, I have my little, again, show Bible, as you want to call it. So I know everything's going to transpire from A to B, but then, you know, it's at that point where, you know, you want to figure out these little tiny nuggets and intricacies that you want to add in that all tie back at the end, but can make sense in this entry alone as well. So it's definitely been a balancing act.
What kind of feedback are you getting on this?
It's been good. Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. Like, I try to put up these entries actually around this time. So, like, late afternoon, early evenings, probably a couple times a week, you know, again, on average, 7 a month. So I try to hit it around a time where people would be more active and kind of engaging in their social media accounts. Now, having said that, there's been times where it's like I post something.
1:30 in the morning.
Or, yeah, like 8 p.m. I'm like, oh, crap, what am I doing? This is a horrible time to post it. But again, it's just more back to that mindset of like, I just got to do this. I got to make it happen. So majority of the time I do post around this time of the day, but there have been times where it's like, 8:30, I'm getting it done and I'm editing and it's like, you know what, I'm just going to put it out. So I try to be consistent with it.
But you know, what type of response, what are people writing into you with and so forth?
Been very good. It's, you know, it's been an overall a pretty good response. I think if anything, I think people have been surprised that I've been able to go like this far in depth with a story like this. You know, I think when I started writing it, they just assumed like, oh, okay, it's maybe a couple chapters and, you know, you might get a chapter here. And then a few months later, there's another chapter. I don't know if people realize like the frequency that I was going to be writing these at. So I think it's for some people's timelines, it's maybe become commonplace reading for their evenings. And then other people, it's just been kind of like when they see it, it's like, oh, this is awesome. You know, we're really enjoying this. So overall, it's actually been pretty good. More than anything, I'm hoping that, you know, people are kind of taking it in and just realizing like, oh, well, I've never really considered going to this place before. And oh, this adventure motorcycle idea, like, what is this about? You know, like, maybe I'll do a little bit of Google magic and see what's this about, you know? That's kind of hopefully provoking some thoughts with that. But the feedback itself overall has been very good.
Excellent. Yeah. Now, what are people going to find when the website comes out and you've got more added on, you know, besides the text of the story? Is it going to be kind of interactive and so forth, or what's going to take place?
Yeah. So it won't be as much interactive as, for example, it'll be more, at least musically speaking, you know, in the story, like I've had an entry every chapter where he's referencing having to write a song or a melody for Setsuko, the friend, because that's part of the deal that, you know, she would make the itinerary for him and help him out. But in exchange, he would have to find time to write her a song or do something creative to send to her. So the idea with that is once I add in the songs, each song will go with a chapter.
Okay.
So obviously by the end of the year, there will be 12 songs to accompany each chapter. And again, it just goes back to the idea of having somewhat of a soundtrack to the reading experience mm-hmm. as well. So that will be the main portion of the musical element. And then there's just going to be another section where, you know, it's probably just going to be like a blog setup where I post fitness related things because I'm a very active, fit person. I'll do fitness related things. I'll do travel related things and kind of branch out that way. And again, like tying back to the interest, I mean, I've just been someone that's always been very active and wanted to go different places. And, you know, before the pandemic, like on average about once a year, I was going somewhere new, whether it was another country or like, you know, another part of this country or whatever. Like I was very active in just finding places to go see and do. And, you know, and there's part of me that I think ultimately with a project like this, I would love to take some inspiration from the late Anthony Bourdain and have shades of what he did for food.
Mm-hmm.
And I can hopefully eventually be in a place in life at some point where I can be almost like a musical or written literary equivalent of what he did for food. Because I've always been a fan of how he was so avant-garde and how he just like traveled and just went about his business. And it didn't matter where he was in the world. He was just going to be the same Tony Bourdain. He wasn't going to get rattled by anyone. He wasn't going to change who he was, but he was going to take in every little thing from a different culture he went to and apply it to his life, you know? And I always appreciated and admired that aspect of how he traveled. So I would say like the final portion of the site will be more travel related posts and things of that nature, because, you know, again, people like that were hugely inspirational and me doing my own travels and then oddly enough kind of working my way to this story, which is obviously travel related. So yeah, it'll be a mix of the story with a bit of a soundtrack to go with it, and then some other like travel and fitness blog type content.
Where's favorite place you've ever visited?
My favorite place? I mean, obviously Japan has been the favorite. I would say it's interesting because the two biggest trips I took were one across the Atlantic and then the one across the Pacific, and they were very different for a lot of different reasons. I would say Japan was by far my favorite just because it was always a place I'd wanted to go to.
Right.
So that, for so many reasons, kind of checked that off the list. And then obviously I knew people over there, so that was nice to see them. But something about the energy of being in Asia was just so different than like when I went to Europe years ago. I feel like, you know, when Americans travel internationally, you know, if you're not going to like Mexico or somewhere in the Caribbean, you know, you may occasionally at some point go to somewhere in Europe, in, you know, UK, mainland Europe, wherever, you know. And there's these certain tropes that you're used to when you travel, I think, to Western countries. Whereas when you go to Asia, there's just a vibrance and just a pace that I haven't really found in many other cities I've been to. Tokyo, I think, is definitely the most exaggerated just because people imagine like the neon lights mm-hmm. and, you know, the just the mass amount of people leaving the subway stations and getting pushed into a subway station, which did happen to me once. That was surreal. I got a video of waiting at that station one morning and I saw the guard come up to push people in. And I just figured, well, I'll just wait for the next one. Well, the next one didn't come. So I was soon to be pushed in with that same group of people. But there was just a different energy with visiting cities like that. Because, you know, Tokyo was great. And then in that same trip, I also went to South Korea for a few days. So going to Seoul was fascinating. One thing I didn't really grasp until I landed there was just how much, in a way, the security is different in South Korea. For example, Google Maps doesn't really exist over there. mainly because they don't want North Korea getting access to satellite access and things like that. So, for example, when I was there, I had to download an app called Navermaps, which was their version of Google Maps. So when it came to navigation or just searching something, your normal things to use weren't available. So you had to be really creative and know and plan ahead of time that, like, hey, I'm going to need to use this app and this app to get around because I can't rely on the same old apps I've used before. So that was very fascinating just because it was a very lively city, but it was so close to, you know, this unthinkable dictatorship that, you know, we can't imagine living in, you know, or even existing nowadays, you know, and it was basically a Sioux Falls to Brookings drive away from Seoul.
Wow.
So it was so fascinating because I'll never forget the first night I was there. Shout out to Airbnb experiences, by the way, because I did one of these experiences the first night I was in Seoul. It was an event where you went as a group to do authentic Korean barbecue and then you would go out for a drink afterwards. But it was during that night when the other guests and I were, you know, doing our thing and having fun that I kind of realized in the back of my head, like, well, any minute this place could be gone.
Wow.
And so these little things you do realize when you're in other places of the world where it's like, well, you know, you're not in the bubble that you're used to living in. And you really have to immerse yourself in the culture that you are in. And how do you immerse yourself and try to be the best person you can be and be as friendly as you can be while not taking anything away from your personality? That's been the biggest thing I've come across, especially in that experience where, you know, for example, that Airbnb experience that I did, there was probably 8 foreigners in that group. I was the only American.
Incredible.
And that has happened to me a few times before. So you learn very quickly in those social situations, you know, you don't rely on a certain stereotype or, you know, there's just certain ways I think you got to conduct yourself in a setting where you don't take away from your personality, but you just have to be more aware of your surroundings and aware that, like,
read the room.
Yeah, exactly. And not everything is going to be like we're used to here. I mean, not to say that, you know, like South Korea doesn't have amazing freedoms. They do for the most part. But there's just different cultural norms in a lot of places in the world, even in other Western countries too, that just aren't as commonplace here. So it's, again, like you said, that's a great way to put it. Like, really being able to read the room and understanding, like, what's the pulse of the surrounding, and, you know, how can I be the best Eric, and even in a way the best American I can be without giving them a bad stereotype? Because I have come across that quite a bit in the years too, is, you know, how can I be myself and enjoy meeting these other people without, you know, being that American, you know? So it's been very fascinating. I've been fortunate to travel to quite a few places, and, you know, each place kind of has a certain memory or a certain, you know, lesson I've learned from it. But I would say, for sure, Japan, I mean, with the story being obvious, that connection, that was probably the favorite for a lot of reasons. But like I said, like, South Korea was very fascinating. Norway was very cool, just because I'm part Norwegian. I mean, I think the name gives it away with the A spelling. It's about as obvious, but as subtle as a punch in the mouth, right?
Where would you like to travel that you haven't been?
Ooh, gosh. You know, I mean, Australia is always high on the list. I've never been to Australia yet, which is funny because my best friend, he and his brother went there a few years ago. And when he came back, I couldn't wait to ask him about that place, because it seems like wherever you go in the world, you're always going to meet a handful of Australians. And not to be stereotypical, but a lot of them are the same way in a great way.
Right.
They're very sociable, fun people to be around. And I couldn't wait to ask him, like, you know, what did you think? You know, how did you have fun? He's like, a beach is a beach. I was,
that's it?
Pretty much, yes. So, yeah, so I always give him a hard time about that. But, yeah, I would say definitely Australia, New Zealand. You know, I would say as far as maybe places in Asia go, I've heard really good things about Thailand. That's always been kind of a popular spot, especially for expats. I know that's been a good place for a lot of people to go. Sri Lanka, I've heard great things about, mainly just the surroundings. I think it's still a little undeveloped for tourism, so I don't know if it'd be like an ideal place to go solo backpack. But Yeah, Sri Lanka would be another one. As far as like other places in the world, Argentina is another place that's been kind of fascinating to me, because it seems like it's that one Latin country that's oddly gotten a strong European influence, but still retained like a Latin origin and culture. So I've always been fascinated in going to a place like Argentina, and I mean, obviously their food's amazing. So sampling more of like the actual the steaks and the, you know, the basically the stuff the gauchos rope in for you, you know. So yeah, those would probably be a few places. I'm sure there's gonna be more I'll think of, and then later I'll be like, oh, crap,
oh, why didn't I mention?
Right, yeah. I wish I'd said that, but yeah, so those would be a few.
All right, well, we're gonna switch gears and go to your music teaching and so forth. How long you been doing that, and what do you teach in the music then?
Yeah, so I actually started teaching. Interesting you say that. I think it was around 8 years ago this week. Mm-hmm. So I've been at this for 8 years now. My main instrument is guitar. I also do a little bit of bass guitar and then also music production.
Excuse me.
So those are my main three areas of expertise: guitar, bass guitar, and music production. Yeah, started a little over 8 years ago, and primarily it's just been in one-on-one lessons, and it's been going pretty well.
What ages do you work with?
You know what? It's really run the gamut. The youngest is 4. The oldest was 62.
Wow.
Yeah.
A beginner 62?
Yes.
Incredible.
Yeah.
That's very cool. But, you know, yep. I can't say anything because just a week ago at the age of 58, I took my first voice lesson.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. It's been a very interesting process because when I started out, it was more of a focused age range. It was, you know, on average, like 10 to 13 years old kind of thing. And then as the years have gone on, it's kind of branched out to older, and then of course even some younger folks, and you know, I find regardless of the age, to me the biggest thing I take away from the lessons I teach and that I always try to remind myself while I'm teaching is you have to adapt to every single person regardless of the age, the race, the gender, whatever it is. I would say one little, I wouldn't necessarily say a gripe, but one thing I have noticed with traditional educators, especially in the years that I've been doing this, is there seems to be a very rigid, cut and dry system of you do this at this time, and that's just what it is. If I fail you, I don't care. There seems to be that sort of mindset and philosophy with a lot of your like more traditional methods of teaching. And I've kind of found, well, you know, every single person has taken a different path in life, right? Everyone's kind of gone up and grown up differently. And you need to reflect that in how you're teaching them. So to me, it's really big that you get to know the person you're teaching and try to figure out, like, you know, not only their personality, but like, what are some of the interests that they're in and some of the things that they want to pursue in life and things like that, that you can kind of intertwine with what you're teaching them. Because I feel like if you're just saying, hey, we're going to do this today and I'm going to teach you that, but you don't have the personality and you're not making the connection with the person, it more likely than not is going to go over their head. Whereas at least if you get to know them and you can understand like how to get that information to them, that's the most important thing. So really, regardless of the age, to me, it's more just getting to know the person and understanding how they tick. And then from there, it's a lot easier to just kind of pivot and say, OK, well, these levels 1 through 5 I'm doing with everyone else, but this is how we're going to approach it because you're a little bit different than this person over here. And that's totally fine. So ultimately, it's just come down to getting to know the person and understanding like, well, where are they going to be able to grasp this material the best?
And what are their goals? What do they want to get out of it? I'm assuming the 4-year-old and the 62-year-old don't have the same goals.
Absolutely the same. No. Yeah, very different. Yeah, it's basically just been a mix of people that, you know, always wanted to learn and this is the time to do it. And then there's been other people where it's like the parents are making them.
Right.
So you run the gamut and you get a little bit of everything. But ultimately, that's kind of been the golden rule that I've taken in the 8 years of doing this is you just have to be more sociable and get to know the person and kind of build up. I call it like social currency, and I don't mean it in like a way of like, oh, you're just like, you know, you're getting to know the people and, you know, like, hey, I get to know you, like I make money. It's not so much like in that term. It's more like, hey, you know, if I could accumulate like a currency with you and we get to know each other a little better, like that just makes, that enriches the experience and the relationship I have with you. So like I've always thought of it in kind of like that term or phrase, you know, like, you know, you kind of have to start by just investing small with that person, and then hopefully as you get to know them, like you get more of an investment, and then they themselves get more invested in the instrument itself. So that's always how I approached it.
Accepting new clients?
Yes, certainly.
Okay. And how do people go about getting in touch with you to have a lesson?
Yes. So my place of work is called Uptempo Music Lessons. You can find us on our website, uptempomusiclessons.com. Also, you could reach out to me through one of my social media sites or my boss's, Andrew Rogers. His last name is spelled R-O-G-E-R-S. You could reach out to him as well. But I would say uptempomusiclessons.com would be the best avenue to reach out.
All right, fantastic. And then what's the website name for AM20? What are we going to have there?
I don't know if I want to give that away just yet.
Oh, my.
I might save that for July 1st.
Okay. Dave. Well, yes. We'll let you save it for July 1st, but that's when we can expect it.
Yes. July 1st, it will be up. Yep.
Fantastic. AM20, the Japan Journal.
Yes.
Eric Manthey, thank you so much.
Thank you,
appreciate
Dave. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll be back to wrap up the Dave Holly Hour in just a moment.
Ladies, when it's time to give your nails some love, get that extra special treatment from Quality Nails on South Minnesota Avenue in Sioux Falls. Manicures and pedicures that look great and make you feel fantastic. Zaya and Tony provide professional care for your hands and feet, whether you just want the basics or an extra special look with added flair. Oh, and guys, it's okay to treat yourself too. Quality Nails. Call for an appointment. 605-334-1463.
From the Dipsy Doodle Studios at the world headquarters of Big D Entertainment, a 40-square-foot home studio in the middle of America, it's Dave Holly.
Thanks again. Appreciate all of you listening. No matter how you do it, whether it's via Apple or Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, you listen on podcast, certainly do appreciate it. Thanks as well for all the shares, the likes on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget, take a look at DaveHollyHour.com or DaveHolly.com if you're looking for other things that I do in the entertainment biz. And you can find stuff on there, take a peek around, look at some pictures, etc., and just have a good old fun time. In the meantime, thanks once again, of course, to our great guest today, Jana Gearhart Fitzsimmons, Artistic Director for Bear Botkin. So excited that Shakespeare will be back in the park this year here in Sioux Falls. And then to Eric Manthey, what a great job he's doing on that writing project. Plus, you know, pretty talented guitarist. If you need somebody to get some guitar lessons, look him up. Also, thanks to the friends down at 9th and Phillips, that wonderful building that houses Wood Grain Brewery, Frontier Bank, and Agua Fresh, that little lobby area there on the first floor. That's where we record many of our conversations. So thank you to them. Don't forget, Saturday night, 5:30, 6 o'clock, come on out. Show starts. We'll have pre-show music at 6 for Midtown Coffee Radio Hour, and then a live show at 7 o'clock out at Straw Bale Winery near Renner. Hope to see you there. Plus, one other thing. Tonight, going to Footloose, Sioux Empire Community Theater. Once again, the weekend is going to be full. For yours truly, I'm Dave Holly, and for me, every day is a holiday.
The Dave Holly Hour has been brought to you by the Sky Lounge and Tea, XL Chiropractic, and Quality Nails. If you would like to contribute to the continued success of this podcast, go to DaveHollyHour.com. At the bottom of the front page is the additional link section. Click on the orange button, Dave Holly on Linktree. You can order merchandise, become a Dave Holly Hour VIP, and make contributions to the show. The Dave Holly Hour is produced in the Dipsy Doodle Studios by Big D Entertainment.
Thanks for listening.